All right, welcome to the On Par special edition, Olympic edition, if you will, with my good man, Kieran Clark. Kieran, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm very good, Anthony. Enjoying the wonderful weather just outside St. Andrews here in the beautiful village of Strathkinnis, which is now my home for the next few months. And obviously, like you, having to sat down and watch the Olympic golf, something that really had a lot of, obviously, controversy, unrest about it going in, a bit of uncertainty as to its future, potentially, of course, going forward. But the players who were there in Rio put on quite a show this weekend. The last 4 days were extremely entertaining on a golf course that was, I think, tremendously interesting to watch, from Gil Hanse, a real modern classic, I would suspect. It made for a great show and obviously had a great final day, reminiscent to the extent of the Open Championship at Royal Troon, when you had Stenson again in there with a duel, this time alongside Justin Rose, going head-to-head there for the title in the end, the gold medal. And you know, it meant so much to Justin Rose, a guy who obviously has talked up the games for years now. It's meant a lot to him, and he played great, held a great pitch and putt in the last hole to win, and it made for a really good bit of viewing. And I think it was, in terms of the week itself, it had to be a success.
Well, before we get to the Olympics, I wanted to congratulate you on the move back to St. Andrews. I know you're just outside of it. How does it feel to be back home?
Well, the home of golf, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great to be here. You know, it's got a wonderful atmosphere to it. A small town itself, only 14,000 people live here permanently, but that swells during each day when all the tourists come in from all kinds of nationalities, and obviously the students as well throughout the autumn and winter come in when the university kicks in September. So it's a great vibrancy to it, a real cosmopolitan atmosphere. And for me, you know, in this kind of modern era where there's so much tension and anxiety between various races and nationalities, sadly, in the world, where it's nice to be in a place where that sort of thing, that collectivism between races, between nationalities, is actually embraced in a really nice atmosphere. And St. Andrews embodies that best of all. It's odd that a little town in the east of Scotland would represent that sort of thing, but it is an international beacon in its own way. And a really wonderful place to spend time, and to have it right on my doorstep is a real thrill and somewhat surreal at the same time.
Now, are you eligible to join now the circuit there that they have?
Unfortunately not, no, because I have to be inside the town to have the automatic eligibility. So for now, I can apply for a certain lesser pass into the courses, but I'm planning on moving into the town in the new year, so hopefully I'll have that gateway to play the golf courses to my heart's content. That said, I am planning on playing golf tomorrow evening at the Eden course, just next to the old course in St. Andrews, which I'm looking forward to tremendously. It's a great little course, underrated, I would suspect, but a place that really complements the better-known courses really well. But to play any course in St. Andrews is obviously fantastic. It's a great atmosphere to it, as I say. They're always busy. It's always vibrant. The courses are always in excellent condition, and the weather forecast is fantastic. So, you know, I couldn't be happier than I am right now.
Well, welcome to my world, the world of non-status.
It's quite a joyous world, isn't it? You feel almost free, and, you know, kind of a nice nomadic existence, I guess. We can play wherever we want.
All right, well, I'll take that. So listen, let's start with the Olympic golf, and we can move outwards from there. Your impressions going into Olympic golf, and then did it change by the end?
Well, I, like many people, were cynical about golf being in the Olympics from the very start. I'm not sure being associated with the IOC or the Olympic Games is necessarily a great thing for the game. That said, when it was in it, I voted in 2009, I naturally wanted it to be a success, because, you know, it was something different, something unique. And obviously this year, it has been disappointing with a number of players who have drew from it, you know, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, so many of the top players, Jordan Spieth as well. And it did put a dark cloud over the event going into it. That's when we got there. I always felt when the golf starts, you know, that's what you talk about in the end. It's like anything, whether it's the Masters, the US Open, or the Open Championship, whatever, it's always a case of, even if there's bad press going into the week, once the golf starts, you kind of forget about that to an extent. And this was no exception. One, I think the golf course, as I said at the start of the show, I think is fantastic to me. It's more of it looks very much like one of those courses down the Gold Coast in Australia, mixed with a little bit of Pinehurst and indeed a little bit of Castle Stewart, another Gil Hanse course up in the north of Scotland. So a really good golf course, wide off the fairway, wide off the tee rather, interesting to watch, rewarded creativity, imagination, something we don't see particularly often on either of the main tours nowadays, sadly. So that's a refreshing thing itself. And obviously, the golf is of a good standard. In the end, over 4 days of a 60-man field, with really half a field were kind of lesser-known pros, you'd expect the best of the best to go to the top, and that ultimately happened, of course, with the top two players there, and Stenson and Rose, who, again, put on a great show. And I think in the end, you know, it became a match play situation, which was ironic and somewhat fitting, given that was probably the format we should have had in the first place. You know, it made the thing very compelling, much like the Open back when Mickelson was going up against Henrik as well there. It made for a really compelling battle, watching two guys going head-to-head, toe-to-toe, you know, trading blows here or there. There were a lot of swings, particularly on the back, and then where Rose dropped a shot, Stenson birdied, and then had various kind of match play situations occurred there. So it made for a compelling watch. And Justin Rose himself, you can see how much it meant to him winning it. He's probably, of all the players in the field, been the number one champion of Olympic of golf being in the Olympics. People have actually shared a tweet from 3 years ago when he was looking forward to the Olympic Games, how much it would be, actually, how much he would embrace being part of it, how much he'd love to be part of that ceremony and that process. So I think the guys who were there have largely enjoyed the experience. Got, of course, it does have a certain novelty factor as well, which I think is obviously appealing to people. Whether it has any great ramifications going forward and for the game, positively or negatively, it's impossible to say at this stage. However, you know, it was a good show, and I think in 4 years' time when we get to Tokyo, you know, we might look forward to that now with a little bit more enthusiasm than perhaps we did this time.
Yeah, I think you summed it up very well. I was one of those people. I actually tweeted out an image of a giant mosquito
I would urge anybody listening now, follow Anthony on Twitter, which I'm sure you do already because he's fantastic, and do go and check out the media section on his Twitter profile, and you will see this masterpiece. It's tremendous.
Well, I just thought it was funny because, you know, it was more of a sarcastic image of something looming over the Olympics in terms of golf and whatnot, and all the athletes. I was just having a little bit of fun with some 3D graphics program, but between that and really nothing positive, you know, in terms of building momentum, you couldn't build less momentum going to the Olympics, given what was going on. I was happy to see that the golf that was played was brilliant. I was happy that they got the show that they needed because, I mean, all due respect to some of the countries, had we not gotten the performance we got today and given the run-up of bad press going into the Olympics, had we had two no-names, so to speak, and I do say that with all due respect, but if we had two no-names or three no-names meddling, I don't think we would. It just wouldn't have. I just don't think they would have gone beyond, Tokyo in 2020. And to some extent, as much as I have, you know, I'm not sure which is worse, the IOC or the NCAA, in America here in terms of, poorly run organizations. But, I would hardly blame them for not wanting to have golf back in the Olympics, given what's gone on with the top players, and then you have, you know, withdrawing for, you know, saying for the you know, in terms of the Zika worry, and then you have people, you know, like Rory McIlroy saying that he's going to watch the Olympics, but only the sports that matter, and none of it, you know. And then on top of that, there was like a little bit of a news, a PGA on the eve of the golf starting in the Olympics, then the PGA put out, it was like a news dump, but it was on a day where it was right before the Olympics were starting for golf, and talking about how they were changing the coverage, I think, to the PGA Championship, I don't remember what event, but it was going to be, you know, commercial free, and doing all this sort of, you know, it was a news drop of some substance, and I just questioned the timing of it. Right before, on the eve of the Olympic golf starting, sort of stealing their thunder a little bit and got, stealing, storylines, if you will. But in the end, I thought that the golf was a winner. Certainly the golf course was a winner. Gil Hands, with the challenge that he had of having to build a sort of a resort course that had to not only be a resort course, but then also test the best golfers in the world, or at least the ones that showed up. I thought he did a remarkable job. And given the, you know, in some levels, I think he deserves a gold medal, given the circumstances of what he's gone through to build that course, moving his family there, and then with all the stop and starts and the questioning and the red tape and the really the wondering if that golf course was ever going to get built in time, for it to pull it off as they've done, and obviously a gold medal to the superintendent as well. You know, how much those guys deserve a lot of credit. I thought he was definitely a winner, at least at these Olympics.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And you know, given the stories we heard about the golf course a year ago, or even 2 years ago, were obviously extremely negative as to how its construction process was going and whether it would be ready in time, as you say. And of course, the event they were going to have beforehand didn't really materialise in too great a detail. There was a small event back in March, I think it was, with Brazilian golfers. But the golf course itself was you know, stunning. It stood out really well. It looked great on television. The players seemed to really enjoy it. It was something a bit different. And it made for exciting golf. It rewarded great play, and also you know, it had enough tricks to it to actually punish players, and they made poor mistakes and poor shots. There was a lot of good runoffs and various other things there. It's a course that, as I say, rewarded creativity and imagination. There was no real set way to play the holes. You could try and find the right part of the fairway. You know, there's a difference between straight driving and accurate driving. You know, it's like Augusta National, where you know it's fine hitting the fairway, but you have to hit the right part of the fairway to get the best angles into the greens, the best roll on the fairway, and it rewarded the real tacticians and practitioners of the game, like Rose and Stenson, obviously the two best players in the field, arguably. But in the end, I think, as you say earlier on, the event itself was almost saved by the players, as it often is. In the end, the players are the ones who ultimately dictate how we assess a particular event, and they obviously came out on top again and put on a very good show. As you say, had someone, a couple of lesser-known players at the top there, that maybe would not have been the case. We maybe would have felt differently about the whole thing altogether. But again, you know, as a positive thing going with it, the crowds there were very good, numbers-wise, certainly, probably, and it's obviously the Olympics Games this year have not been particularly well attended across the board in Rio for a variety of reasons, mostly economic, unfortunately. But the golf was particularly well attended, all sold out over yesterday and today, 15,000 each day. That said, there was the golf fans who, or the fans who were there, were not necessarily all proper golfers and didn't really understand the etiquette of the game. There's an awful lot of situations where people were clicking their phones or their cameras, and there was a lot of stops of the players and a lot of kind of distractions around them. Even a couple of times, a couple of fans tried to pick up the ball, including one happened to Justin Rose, I think, in one of the early holes. Yeah. Picked up his ball. And a guy on the last hole, a man draped in a Mexican flag, tried to pick up Marcus Fraser's ball. So, and actually, of course, wearing a Mexican flag, I'm sure we'll hear about this from Donald Trump's Twitter feed later on this evening once he catches wind of this. But yeah, I'm only joking there. But yeah, so obviously a lot of positive. But on the upside with this, a lot of people watching golf at Rio who were not necessarily golfers, and that's obviously introducing new people to the game, and that's a positive thing, of course. But I think in the end, you know, with any event, any Olympic Games or anything else, really, you can't really get a just assessment of the legacy until a few months or even years down the line. Who knows how many people across the world watched golf who wouldn't normally watch golf? Who knows if that's going to impact participation? I remain extremely sceptical about that. However, it didn't do it any harm, that's for sure. And I do hope in a few years' time, you know, the more the top players do play in Tokyo, and give golf a good future in the games going forward, because it's there, it's part of it, it was unique, it was different. And every 4 years, I'm sure the game can accommodate. And that's one thing you brought up there, and I mentioned the PGA Tour and how you met, you know, obviously the golf was not united going into the Olympic Games. The players were not all united, obviously. Many of them skipped the thing altogether, of course. But also the organisations behind golf were not united over this. The PGA Tour in particular did not colour himself in any glory over this whole process, where the LPGA, on the other hand, have accommodated their players. They have left a gap in the schedule, given their players the freedom to come to Rio, where they'll play next week, and all the top female players will be there next week. It should be a great event as well. But this week here, the PGA Tour, of course, are playing the John Deere Classic alongside this one, and also have other events, also FedEx Cups coming up very quickly. And even ultimately in the end, the PGA Tour didn't even try and accommodate the PGA Championship, which, of course, was played ludicrously the week after, or 2 weeks after the Open Championship, when in reality, I'm sure the PGA of America would have rather had their major in late August. But the PGA Tour, with their magical FedEx Cup, which everyone, of course, cares about immensely, they they didn't accommodate that either. So the PGA Tour ultimately is an organisation that, if it doesn't influence or, you know, affect their bottom line and their income, they're not interested. And unfortunately, that attitude, I think, has seeped into a few of the players' minds. It made it harder for the players to actually commit to the Olympic Games with scheduling. So going forward, if golf wants to have a future in Olympic Games, it's not just the players have to get behind it. I think also the governing bodies and all the organisations have to as well. And hopefully that will happen. But as I say, everyone's going a bit overboard with Olympic Games. I've been reading Twitter this evening. Everyone's going on about how fantastic it was, how it was a great event. Oh, how the guys who were, they'll be wishing they were there now and all this kind of stuff. Well, in the end, will we be thinking about this in 6 months' time? I'm not so sure. It was very good. It was a fun event to watch. Justin Rose, the guy, as I said earlier on, is someone who has been so adamantly behind the Olympic Games. He's wanted to be part of that experience. He's someone who enjoys all sports. He's embraced it immensely. And he's certainly a fitting champion to have there. He, you know, the passion he showed and hold that putt in the last was tangible. And, you know, it was good to watch. It was something different that you have that kind of international, nationalistic aspect to it. You have players playing for their country. It brings a different edge to it, which you don't see very much of. But going forward, I think we'd like to see a different format. A match play format would be much more interesting going forward. This week, again, was saved by the players creating that environment for themselves. But I think going forward, if we actually had a match play situation, it would be a far more intriguing event from start to finish. Can you imagine if Justin Rose was maybe 10, 12 shots ahead this week? It would not be obviously very exciting at all to watch. So I think a match play format would be much better going forward. But the game itself has to get behind it if it wants to remain part of the Olympic Games. But I hope it is, because on the face of it, it was, on a viewing level, a success. There is something about it that is quite appealing and exciting. So hopefully it can build going forward. But, you know, for Justin Rose, he's the first guy in 112 years to win this thing, and probably it means more to him than any other player in the field.
What if match play is really not good enough for the PGA Tour? I mean, they only do it once a year, and then, of course, every other year, or I guess, if you will, every year with the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup. So let's say twice a year. If it's not good enough for our own tours and the world tours, then why would it be? Why do you think it would be good enough for the Olympics?
Well, I think that we have to look at the fact that the Ryder Cup is the most watched golf event in the world, by far.
Right.
In some years, it's the third most watched event in world sport. And, you know, and that's obviously a much bigger pool than just golfers watching it. Sports fans watch it. Obviously, there's that nationalistic US against Europe aspect to it. But people in Australia watch the Ryder Cup. People in Japan, South Africa watch the Ryder Cup as well. Because it has that almost gladiatorial, adversarial, you know, two guys against the other two guys, or people going head-to-head in the singles. People enjoy watching that sort of thing. Golf, if you're a casual viewer, say you watch tennis, it's head-to-head. If you watch golf, well, there's 60 guys just playing a golf course. You know, it's a different kind of environment. And it's a bit like, you know, most sports, I think, individually, work best when they're kind of head-to-head and people enjoy that aspect to it. So I think that's why you consider, obviously, the Ryder Cup's a big success every 2 years, and has, you know, has all those ingredients which the Olympic Games could also adopt themselves, with obviously even more countries around the world. And when you go in 4 years' time into Japan, and we all know how popular golf is in Japan, you see the amount of Japanese, you know, club manufacturers, how many fans there travel around the world, how many golfers from Japan come to Scotland to play St Andrews or go to the United States. It's a big deal in Japan. We'll probably see that in 4 years' time in Tokyo. But to answer your question there, I think in the end, if you want to see how match play can make an event thrive, make it a success, then again, the Ryder Cup is the ultimate example.
Right, but logistically, the Ryder Cup is only, you know, it's just two teams. You know, it's not multiple countries, so to speak. I mean, I feel like between that and, of course, TV and not knowing when it's going to end and the timing and all that kind of stuff. I guess in that regard, the Olympics is fine because they could just cut away to a new event, if you will. So I guess on that level, I guess it's really not that big of a deal. I don't like the standard four round format as a regular event. The thing about golf, you can love golf and you can love the Olympics. I don't know if you have to love golf in the Olympics. And if you don't, and this is coming from somebody who I thought the medal ceremony was amazing. I loved it. I thought it was excellent. Yeah. It was great to see Justin Rose, particularly at the top, although I would have been happy with any of them, but I know how much it meant to the likes of Justin Rose and even Kuchar, and Stenson. I mean, any of those guys. I mean, it's fitting that the three of the more vocal guys, obviously Fowler and Watson, were vocal as well. But and I say vocal in being big enough names. I'm sure obviously Sergio was all in from the get go, but you could tell that it really meant something to them, and I thought that was excellent. I just don't know if there's room for in the world of golf, if there's room for the Olympics. The world of golf, you know, this idea of growing the game is not, and I hate to say this, it would be the cynic, but it's not about growing the game of golf, but it's for them it's about growing the pie of the golf industry. And not growing the game, it's growing the pie. And I just don't think there's any room for it. There's just too many competing entities, and case in point, your point is spot on. The PGA Tour is not going to, even though they want to grow the game, they obviously didn't bend their schedule or make any accommodations for players and in their schedules that the PGA of America, you know, nobody made any concessions in terms of their scheduling other than moving up things, I guess you could say, was really the only thing, just so that they could fit it in for those who were going. But in the end, whatever they did move still wasn't worthy enough for the players to want to do it. So how does
that's true. And, you know, again, but the point would always be is that it's once every 4 years. So why can't the game somehow come together and accommodate that? You know, tennis has done it brilliantly. There's a lot of cynicism about tennis being Olympic Games when it came back in, I think, only just over a decade ago now. And there was a lot of cynics about that, saying, well, these guys are all multimillionaires. They all play Wimbledon, US Open. That's what matters to them. They won't really embrace it. But you watch the tennis players. You know, Novak Djokovic was in tears after losing in the first round last week. You know, obviously, you know, Rafa Nadal has said that the biggest disappointment of his career was missing out on London 2012. Not missing any of the Grand Slams since then due to injury, but that particular event, Andy Murray, who's in the final this evening, he mentioned that carrying the GB flag in the opening ceremony this year was the biggest honour of his career. So the tennis players have embraced it tremendously. I'm just curious as to why golf hasn't done the same. And, you know, maybe if it was better accommodated, maybe it would have been. I think the players in golf almost feel like the Olympics was sort of thrust upon them more than anything else. Maybe they didn't. Again, golf probably doesn't need the Olympic Games, and the Olympic Games doesn't need golf either.
Right.
But even then, you know, they can still abide every 4 years, I'm sure, for 1 week, because it was a good show. It was a good showcase for the game. It was a well-attended event there as well. It was good for the Olympic Games to have that there. I like you. I was very cynical about it when it was announced in 2009. I remained that for a while, but I wanted it to be a success because, you know, it's there. You may as well be as good as it possibly can be. And I think, who knows, if it was part of the Games over decades, maybe eventually it would start to mean something important. Obviously, it's not going to be the claret jug or the green jacket anytime soon, or maybe even ever. Probably not. That said, maybe I'm just an old-fashioned, you know, softy at heart. I'm an old-fashioned romantic. But for me, the Olympic gold medal for golf means a little bit more than the FedEx Cup champion.
Without question. And that's well put. And going back to your tennis, though, your comparison, though, does, and maybe you know this more than I, because I don't, I mean, outside the major events, I don't really pay attention to tennis. But does tennis have the prize fund avail, you know, that the PGA Golf has and the European Tour has and the FedEx Cup?
Yeah.
And is the payouts in tennis is comparable to golf?
Oh, definitely, if not more. You look at the leading earners in tennis, and you look at the Federer and Nadal and Murray and Djokovic, those guys are up there with the highest earners in the PGA Tour historically.
Right.
So the money is there in tennis. Maybe the scheduling is a bit different. You know, again, golf is a very odd system, very odd season where there's obviously conflicting tours and whatever else. Tennis more or less has a world tour that's united at the top level, so that's easier to obviously manage. Golf has obviously European Tour, PGA Tour, and all the rest of them.
Right.
And they're all conflicting, as you said, they're different interests, all they're out for their own game, which is fine, that's why they're there. But that said, all the tours did accommodate the Olympic Games apart from the PGA Tour, and I think that says you know a lot about them and what their ambitions are. Because the PGA Tour's bottom line is massive as it is. They have a monopoly on the best players in the game, all the big money, big TV deals. They have all that. And I think it would have been a good message from them if they tried to accommodate this better. But the PGA Tour, I think, has always been somewhat bitter about the fact that most of the game's leading events are not under their control. The four majors, the Ryder Cup, they have nothing to do with any of them. And I think that wrangles them a little bit. They feel they're the biggest tour in the game. They have the biggest power in the game, if you like, monetarily, of course, and obviously with the players, but that they still don't really have the big events. The Players' Championship is there, and that's fine. It's grown to something to obviously almost be a major championship in many people's minds, something like a big tour event people pay attention to. And the FedEx Cup itself is, you know, who remembers who wins the FedEx Cup? It's an event that has no historical meaning as of yet.
No.
It may never will. I don't know. To me, the FedEx Cup is just rich guys getting richer. I don't think that's particularly compelling to most sports fans. You know, people watch sport to watch guys win titles. They don't watch the NFL because a guy gets paid $100,000 a week, or they don't watch soccer because Wayne Rooney earns £150,000 a week at Manchester United. They watch it because they want to see guys winning the titles and teams winning titles. Things that actually matter, and they think sport has lost its way in so many ways over the decades because it's become so much about sport and money now. You know, TV's dominated it. There's billions poured into sport every single year, and it's polluted it in so many ways, which has led to, you know, obviously cheating and all kinds of doping scandals. It's all there, and it's all because of the money behind it. And I think the Olympics is, you know, again, it's a gold medal. It's a unique emblem of sport. Whether you like Olympic Games or not, whether you know, like the IOC or not, it is an iconic title. And again, for golf, there was no money this week. It was about the title. And I think that means a lot. You know, at the Masters, the green jacket's what we want to see guys win. The Open Championship, it's about the claret jug. The titles mean something. And for me, to have an event that actually the title is the most important thing about it is quite appealing. I don't know, but I think it's... Maybe I'm just a bit naive, but I think it would be nice if every 4 years the game could actually try and accommodate this, because I think it would do the game good overall.
When does, and forgive me because I don't know, and I'm not sure you know either, but when will the IOC make a decision on whether golf goes past 2020? Do they make it before 2020, or
yes.
Do they make it?
Yes.
So they'll make it before.
Do next you know, year, I think.
Excuse me?
I think it's next year, 2017, because that's when in 2017 is when they decide what events will be in the Olympic Games in 2024 and 2028. So I believe next year is when golf will be back up again. So again, you know, even if Rory and Jordan and all those guys play in 4 years' time, by that stage, golf could be leaving the Olympic Games after then. That could be the last one, for all we know. So the decision will be made before then.
So the $26,000 question is, did Justin Rose and Matt Kuchar and Henrik Stenson do enough to save golf in the Olympics past 2020?
That's a very good question. Also, we'll find out soon. I would think, you know, they've made the case. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
The event was well attended. I don't know what the viewing figures were, but we'll see what they are in the future. I think the event in America on the first day was watched by 400,000 people, so that was more than the John Deere Classic significantly, and the US Senior Open, so that was something. So we'll see how that looks internationally. So it was well attended there, hopefully well watched on television, and you had an exciting finish itself. So it bled in quite well. Obviously, a relatively established name won it, which is obviously important. The recent Open champion finish in second is obviously very good. Like you said earlier on, had it been, you know, Marcus Fraser's one of the good guys in European Tour.
Yes.
I'm sorry he didn't win a medal this weekend. But if Marcus Fraser was a gold medalist and maybe Seamus Power from Ireland came through and finished second,
right,
then I'm not sure it would have the same cachet. But I think golf this weekend has earned something. It has got something behind it that is to make a case for itself. Whether it succeeds or not is another thing entirely. But I would like to think it would. I think it's something that could grow in future. Not to be as big as the majors or anything like that, but just to be something that's there. You know, the tennis in the Olympic Games isn't as big as Wimbledon or the US Open or the French Open, but it's still something significant. And I think golf could have that as well, because in the end, all the tour events in the game, they're there every single week. They all play for $1.4 million every week, but they all roll into one. There's nothing unique or just, there's nothing about them that's distinct. The Olympic Games at least has a certain distinctness about it, a uniqueness about it, something that gives it a certain level of allure and prestige just by being that event itself. So I would like to think that golf would still be part of the Olympics after 2020. And this, again, to answer your question, we'll wait and see what happens. But I think the guys this weekend have at least made a case. That's a key thing.
I'm going to go as far as say as I think it will be.
I hope so.
I'm going to say they're going to vote for 2024. And the reason why I say it is because one of what the three medalists did today and who they were, that's number one. And two, I think that being that they know that Japan and how crazy, as you said to speak to your point earlier, Japan is crazy for golf. So they're going to see good numbers there, and they're going to see another, a good turnout for there. So they know the numbers are going to be even better than they were this year. So if they already know that 2020, if they know that this year was good or good enough, and they know that 2020 is going to be better, I think they can look to build on that for 2024. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it's going to go at least one more games after 2020, and then I think they're going to look back at the three, and they're going to say, okay, do we have enough of a sample here to decide going forward. But I think the real question is after 2024, when they've had enough of a sample for the three games that golf would have had by then participated in, to see if golf was able to save itself from something that they've wanted to do from the get-go, and that is, tweak the format for a proper test of golf that fits within the games and fits within the game of golf, of course, but also for the spectators as well. And I think with more people showing up, you could say that Rio was unfortunate besides the golf course, turning out to be great. It didn't have a lot of the good PR that you want going into the games. And not even the golf course was getting good PR, to be honest, as we spoke to earlier. But I don't think we're going to have any of that going to Hong Kong and going forward. This was a unique case of some serious politics with a new course being built, combined with the unfortunate outbreak of the Zika virus and with some poor economic conditions the black cloud of an economic conditions sort of over casting the games in general, given its locale. I don't think we're going to have as much of that issue going forward. We're not going to be building golf courses. We're going to be going to a place in Hong Kong where they're going to love, in Japan, where they love golf, and it's a great facility. That facility that's already built and ready and willing and waiting.
Yep.
So I don't think this was a sort of really tough first foot forward, but I would say they've done enough to get to 2024, but beyond that, they're going to have another good showing with medalists. They're going to have to tweak the format to appeal to everybody, not just the players, but the fans, to the non-golfing world, if you will. And then we'll just go from there. So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And also, I would just quickly say, I think you're right there about Tokyo in 4 years' time being, I think golf this week itself, obviously all the bad press going into it, it came out of it as well as it possibly could have done. I think that's what you can say about it as being a kind of a way to sum up the week. It came out as well as it could have possibly done. But I think also going forward, you mentioned a change in the format, having more players involved, and that will probably happen, I would imagine, over the next 4 years. But also I think even longer term, they have to have greater assurances from the PGA Tour and elsewhere as well, that the games will be shown due respect, if you like. Much that the LPGA has done. The LPGA is also a different case. They need more of the exposure, if you like, and Olympic Games is a certain unique a showcase for them. But if the PGA Tour was to adopt a similar policy to them and actually accommodate the games, allow the PGA Championship to move to a better place as well, free up a few weeks for players after the Open Championship to play in the Olympic Games and then settle down for the PGA and then the playoffs and the FedEx Cup, then I think that would show the IOC and the Olympic Committee that golf is serious about this overall. I think there's almost a sense that golf wasn't serious about being in the Olympic Games. That may or may not be the case, but I think, as we both agree here, golf came out of this as well as it possibly could have done, given the whole circumstances and the dark cloud that came into it.
Wouldn't it be insane if the PGA of America decided to move the PGA Championship outside of the United States every 4 years and was somewhat in the same vicinity of the games, give it for that for every 4 years, to have an event, have the PGA Championship within, you know, obviously not across the world, but if it's in the, you know, relatively close, if they know ahead of time where the games are going to be, and they, of course they will, then why not schedule the PGA Championship if you're the last major right before the Olympics? Why not be closer to there so players could then, you know, you can contest the PGA, make it an international PGA. You're still the PGA of America. You're still going to collect the revenues and still collect all the money for it. But take it to a part of the world that's going to be relatively near the Olympics. If you're going to be that close, why not?
Well, absolutely. You know, for years now, people have mentioned the PGA Championship, which is the best will in the world, the ugly sister of the four majors. It's the one we care about the least. It's the least distinctive of them. It feels more like an amped up tour event than any of the other three. So any way to make that event more distinct and unique would be only welcome. Of course, Ted Bishop, the former PGA of America president, who of course was ousted rather unceremoniously in 2014 after a variety of gaffes and various incidents, he had the idea, he actually looked into this quite seriously, to actually take the PGA Championship abroad, take it to Australia or to Asia, new markets, different golf courses, make the event unique, take it around the world, which in the end, we are in a world game now, and golf, it feels even more like now that way now, now we're in the Olympic Games. So the it's a nonsense to have three of the majors in one country. One should certainly go touring around, and the PGA is the best place to do so. Whether it will or not is another thing entirely. Obviously, the PGA of America would have to face potentially a revenue drop from television. That said, they could go to China and there's a lot of money there. And obviously, all their members in America, all 28,000 of them, might be a little bit sceptical of the move as well. But for the good of the game and the good of themselves as a championship and as an organization, it would speak volumes if, in a few years' time, the PGA Championship was to go abroad every few years. And it would. I'm with you. I think that's a great idea. I think, you know, yeah, I like that idea of having right before the Olympic Games, having the PGA then have Olympic Games after it. Whether it be in the same, whether it be in the same continent or whatever else, that'd be a great thing as well. So I do like that idea. I think it's a little bit unlikely. That said, you know, the thing is about golf is most of the good ideas unfortunately don't come to fruition, and I think that's another one you mentioned right there.
Yeah, yeah, and you could even have a prominent European tour event to play that you know, you can reschedule a particularly maybe a higher prize fund tournament to be played that week before, in between, in case players wanted to stick around for that as well. So the European tours and the PGA of America could, the European tour and the PGA of America, if they had sort of combined forces every 4 years to make a 3 week sort of, you know, you know, it's just like you have the Scottish Open on a links course right before the Open Championship. Well, you can do something like that where you have a you have the PGA Championship and then a prominent European Tour event right before the games and then the Olympic Games. It'd be a fun 3 weeks of golf for those who wanted to make the make the trip.
It would, but who is missing out in that fun 3 weeks? The PGA Tour. Well, they were the ones that stand in the way.
Well, I mean, I guess you could say, and of course, right, but you could also then, but, you know, people still, the PGA Tour funds a lot of people. They have a lot of journeymen on that tour. You know, you could look down that list and say that guy won $7 million, and you would have never guessed it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and quite frankly, they had the John Deere this week. So, and the John Deere is they're playing it. There are people there and there are players playing it. So the PGA Tour, if you want to call it a B event, will never be short of players to play in a B event. They play in the John Deere and countless other B events that happen during the year anyway. Mm-hmm. There are events going on during the World Golf Championships, is there not, right? They have the Mayakoba in Mexico. So there are alternate events all the time. So if the PGA Tour wants to, you know, pick its bat and ball and go home, you know, and go home, they can do that and play and have a B event. I mean, you're right. They will be they will not be for this. I agree, and I agree with you on your other point in that if it makes sense, they probably won't do it. But it doesn't mean that we can't go on and have our own little podcast and have pie in the sky solutions to the world of golf. That's why we're here.
Our fantasy world is a lot more appealing than the real world. So let's keep living in our fantasy.
This is what we do here on this show, Kieran. We are a river unto our people. We are the beacons of hope for the people who want to see a better and braver new world of golf.
If we are the beacons of hope, the world is screwed. That's a depressing thought.
Well, that goes without saying, but, you know, I still have to say it. You know, little do they know. But anyway, so that's my pie in the sky, 3 weeks to fix the every 4 years Olympic solution.
Yeah, I love it.
Right? Why not?
Yes, great.
I am, let's switch over to the ladies. I am, having been through, you know, being a sort of, I've come to appreciate since doing the radio show and talking to people, I am by no means a golf course, expert. A golf course architect, you know, expert in that field, but I've come to appreciate it immensely than I was, let's say, 5 years ago, and a lot of that has to do with my, you know, talking to people like you, and then doing my regular Saturday radio show, and talking to people who are experts, like the one I just had yesterday, talking to Phil Young, who is the source on all things A.W. Tillinghast. So, but I love the Gilhands course, and despite my mixed feelings of the golf and the Olympics, I am eagerly now waiting to see how the girls attack it because, like you said, it is a wonderful strategic course, and it goes to show you that you can have strategy without rough, and that you can look at green complexes and then work your way back from the green to the tee as opposed to looking from the tee to the green and how you're going to attack it. Because you don't have to be you can be in the fairway and be in the wrong spot. When you have big, wide fairways, but when you have a green complex that's designed for golfers to play it from up the middle and not from the far left or from the far right, where you're going to now have to, you know, traverse bunkers and moundings where it's going to a mounding that's going to repel your ball further away from the flag as opposed to and don't get me wrong, I know players can attack with, you know, the aerial attack in golf is well documented, but still you can still have wide fairways and have strategy in golf, and that's what I love about this golf course.
Yeah, it's a great way of putting it, and I couldn't agree more. The golf course itself, I think most courses in the world would benefit by being a little bit wider, would have less rough on it. Because in the end, the rules of golf, you know, essentially view fairway and rough as being the same. You know, rough doesn't have to be there. It's not a hazard. It's not like a bunker or water, which are definitive hazards. Rough is just something we've added there to make a golf course more difficult, not necessarily more interesting or more fun to play. And the one thing for me, I'm not an expert in golf architecture, and I think, you know, I try and understand as best I can. I like reading about it. But for me, a golf course, my number one definition is that a golf course I'd want to go and play? And the golf course in Rio is one of those courses. It looks fantastic. It looks great fun to play. It looks testing, but also imaginative and playable. And, you know, it allows people to go and score. But then who cares if a guy or a girl shoots 20 under? What difference does it make? You know, if USGA and the US Open has for years now just confused me with the whole attitude of trying to oppress the best players in the world. I don't understand it. Surely wanting the best players in the world to be able to go out and express themselves and to actually work their own way of playing each hole, And play the course their own way and allow their own skill set to come out on top, when the USGA and the US Open is the complete opposite of that. They like to dictate everything to the player and control everything, and that's not what the game should be. I think golf is inherently quite an artistic game. It's about creativity and imagination and obviously the ability to map out shots in your head and then having the skills to execute them. That's what golf should be about. And for me, the Olympic golf course is the best example of a venue that does that, like Augusta National, particularly in its old days before the rough came in, like this old course St Andrews, or like Royal Melbourne, those courses which are wide open off the tee, give you options. It's much more interesting to watch and much more interesting to play. And again, the game's lost its way in that respect at the top level. And the LPGA Tour players, who, you know, I think they themselves, they play the game in a more accessible way to us as viewers. They hit the ball, you know, relatively the same distance as a relatively decent male handicap player would. So they play the game distance-wise in a way we can understand. They just happen to be much better at it than we are. I think we can actually appreciate the women's play more than the men's play, because the men play a game that's so far beyond most of us, it's unreal, but the women play a game that's close to our limitations. They're just far more consistent at it, and they're far better at it. So I think the women's game itself, obviously next week's going to have the best players there, Lydia Ko, Brooke Henderson, all these top players. Obviously Lexi Thompson was there actually watching Olympic Games today. She watched the finale with the men, which is a great touch. So we're going to see the best players there. And it's going to be a great showcase for them. Hope people have watched it this week and will tune in next week, where they will see some, you know, great golf on a fantastic golf course. And I'm looking forward to it. One, not because of the golf course, but two, because I enjoy watching the LPGA Tour players get around and play. And, you know, we're going to have the best players there. So we have an Olympic champion next week. It almost feels, you know, even more genuine than Justin Rose does. Because in the end, Justin Rose has beaten far more strong fields than he did this week. It's still a great achievement, but the winner next week will truly have beaten the best players.
Yeah, absolutely. I just hope that, and I love everything that I love everything about the LPGA except for the pace of play, and even the pace of play today for the men was challenging at times. So that could be a major, that could be a big problem in terms of the perception of golf. I mean, for particularly for people who don't watch it on a regular basis, we joke around about it because we're familiar with it, unfortunately, and we're used to it and we know it. But they're going to be, the eyes of the world are going to be on them. People who have no idea, and like you said, you know, there's going to be a lot of people in the crowd who are non-golfing fans, and you know. I remember when Sergio went through that little re-gripping problem at the U.S. Open at Bethpage, and a fan yelled out, "Hit the ball already." I'm not saying it's going to get to that. I'm just saying that's not the, you know, that's not something I want to experience watching the girls next week. I want it to be, you know, fantastic golf, which I'm sure it will be. The course has proven to be a winner. I'm not sure who's a bigger winner at this point. Maybe Justin Rose or maybe Gil Hans's business. I'm not sure. I think that I'm looking forward to it. I do have concerns about the pace of play, though.
Well, that's a good point, and I hadn't really thought about that. But you are right about obviously having viewers watching who aren't particularly accustomed to watching golf at all. You know, whether that will put them off or not, who knows? That said, maybe because that will be their first introduction to golf, that's what they will expect it to be like going forward. It's always slow. When we as viewers, who like obviously regular golfers ourselves, who obviously know the game a bit better, and we want to see the game play at a faster pace. But the pace of play was quite poor at times today, you're right in saying as well. I think the crowds played a part in that as well, how, you know, fairly, you know, etiquette wasn't the best from them. They also had a lot of cameras there and whatnot as well. So hopefully they'll also educate the fans who are there next week a little bit better than what they were this week. You make it clear that, you know, cameras, you know, they're not really, you know, don't take them when guys are swinging or getting ready to hit shots. But yeah, the pace of play will be an issue next week, I think, as well, as all this is. That said, the golf course we're going to see, generally speaking, I watch the LPGA more often when it's a major championship, when the golf course setups are very punishing, very narrow, very tight, and play is always slower on courses like that. I'm hoping that the wider, more free course that the Olympic golf course is, that may allow the girls to actually play a little bit faster, a little bit, there's a little bit less stress over it as such, there's less rough to have to hack out of, there's less trees to have to navigate, there's less hazards, if you like, that are certainly visible. The golf course is full of, you know, less obvious hazards, a lot of mounds here or there. Like the 18th green, for example, is very much based on the 18th green at St Andrews, the old course with the Valley of Sin. It's the same sort of idea with a little runoff is short of the green, where if you come up slightly short, you'll run into that little area there. So the same sort of idea. So the golf course has more subtle challenges. So hopefully we'll see a pace of play pick up. But that said, you know, I think, you know, with so many players on the course, you can flick between various groupings at the same time, so you can actually avoid the sense that it's very slow if you have a good broadcaster, where you can flip between various groups and actually catch them when they're just about to hit a shot. So the broadcasting can play a very important role, which brings me to my last point here. was that you guys over there in America had the Golf Channel NBC commentators doing the event, but over in the UK, we had the international feed commentators doing the golf in the Olympics. And you may have seen this on Twitter from various UK guys you might follow, but the commentators, the announcers for the international feed were possibly the two of the worst I've ever heard in my entire life. You know, I don't think I've ever actually watched golf before. Some of the stuff they were saying was unbelievable.
Yeah, I thought I saw some of that. I thought they had said that I didn't know that up until today, actually. Although maybe I heard a couple of things. People said there were a couple of hints at it because of some of the vernacular that the commentators were using. But then I heard, that they didn't even ask. I saw a tweet today. They didn't even ask Peter Alliss or Cotter or anybody.
Well, that's right. That's the BBC in the UK. Didn't have any golf commentators there. Andrew Cotter's one of the regular commentators. He was actually at Olympic Games doing other sports. Wasn't asked to do this. Peter Alliss or Ken Brown weren't there either. So we had the international feed guys to do it all across the world. And there were one guy, I think it was Australian, one guy was English, and I have no idea who they are. No one does, I don't think. I haven't seen their names anywhere. I think they're part of some witness protection program or something. No one knows who these two guys are. But it was beyond parody. Everything they read was straight out of the media guide. We even had the famous fact was mentioned on the first day that Tong Chai Jai Di was a paratrooper. I was waiting for it all day, and they finally mentioned it twice, I think. That's the number one. 25 years ago, something relevant today. But some of the cliches they were using were ridiculous. You know, one guy said, oh, he tucked it in the hole with his stick. Really? What are you talking about? what is he watching? And we had a guy today on the second hole, which is a par four. Justin Rose hit a great shot onto the green, and the commentator said, oh, he's got a great putt for eagle now. And it's like, well, I don't think he does. You're a bit ahead of yourself there. And then the guy went to apologise about four times about it. So these two clowns were utterly clueless. But in a funny little way, they were actually quite entertaining and just how bad they were. So if anyone knows their names, please let me know who these two guys are, because they were so bad they were good.
Well, either way, I will say this. Regardless of what you think about golf and the Olympics, the bottom line is, to this point, and I know it's not over, but we've had a spectacular summer of golf.
Yes.
DJ got his first win. The duel at Troon. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Walker with that putt on the last at the PGA. I thought it was a fantastic summer.
It was. Well, obviously the highlight's going to be the Open Championship, which was really the one major that went without incident.
Yep.
US Open obviously had an issue with the rules there. DJ saved the USGA from themselves that time, thankfully.
Yeah.
The PGA Championship was affected by weather, of course, but Jimmy Walker was a great champion. A great finish in the end with Jason Day making that eagle on the last.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Masters had George Steve collapsing on the 12th and then Danny Willett coming through and winning. So it's been a very eventful summer of golf. Now we have the FedEx Cup, of course, which is a little bit of a snooze fest for me, but we're only 47 days, Anthony, until the Ryder Cup. So more good golf's on its way.
Yep, it sure is. I actually have I'll be out at the Barclays next week, which is right here on Long Island. So I'll be out there for a good part of the week. I don't know if it'll be every day. So I'm sort of looking forward to that. A lot of good things going on here. I recently played Bethpage Black, and it's in phenomenal shape, obviously. It's gone through a little bit of an evolution that I'm not exactly positive, is sure that it's in the best interest of the golf course and its original design, but that's another story for another day. But it was, so I'm looking forward to that. It's been it's a good way to end the summer, before, work starts back up in the fall. And then of course the, riveting FedEx Cup Finals.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we've covered just about everything we needed to cover. What do you think, my friend?
I think we have, yes.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and we'll do it a little more closer together than this time. It's just been a little crazy, but as always,
well, Anthony, are we gonna have a special show dedicated to the FedEx Cup? Are we gonna do that? Maybe a 10-minute podcast, perhaps at most.
We could have you know what? If we're going to do that, it can't be more than 2 minutes. I'm not sure I could talk about the FedEx Cup for more than 2 minutes.
All needs to be said, I think.
Is that enough for you?
Well, 30 seconds would do me, but I'll leave the rest to you.
All right, well, I believe that's our music, and it for the Olympic edition of the On Par podcast. I want to thank Kieran Clark, my good friend from GolfShake.com.
Thank you very much.
And always a pleasure, and we'll catch up with you soon, my friend.
Okay, cheers, Anthony.
Cheers.